welcome to Soul Talk with Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel. Rabbi Aaron, the holiday of Purim is upon us, and it's a fantastic holiday because it's a lot of fun, but the theme of it, I mean, there's so many important themes that are always relevant to a degree, but I feel like with what's going on right now in the world, it's more relevant than it ever has been in my lifetime. We have this plan of the evil Haman that wants to annihilate the Jewish people and all the inner workings of what's happening, what we don't really know what's happening in the middle of the story, how ultimately, as we all know, we're saved. And Esther, having no idea why she was placed in the king's palace, is ultimately the key to the salvation of the nation. And there's a whole purpose. And God was in this picture when we were wondering, where is God this whole time? It's a fantastic story. It's so relevant. The challenge I was thinking with what we're going through right now is that we are in the middle of our story. We're in the middle of a crisis. We're in the middle of a trauma. We're in the middle of a drama that's pretty scary. And we don't know how it's all going to pan out, even though I understand God is in this picture. He hasn't fallen asleep, just like he didn't fall asleep in the Purim story. The fantastic thing about the Purim story is that we know how it ends, that Haman is hanged instead of Mordechai, and we were all saved. But I'm really realizing that as we're in the middle of this story now with what's happening here in Israel and all these enemies out to try wanting to annihilate the Jewish people once again, we're in the middle of the story, and we have this Purim story that we can look back on and see the whole story, the whole picture. So I really want to gain strength from that story that we're about to, again, celebrate. What are the lessons we can take from that story that can give us strength right now through the challenging times that we're going through?
Yeah. Well, one of the takeaways from the Purim story is that God has a plan and God has a purpose, and it will be accomplished. And the question is, are you going to be an accomplice to that plan and story? Or are you going to be in denial of it? Are you going to line up with it or deny it? But Haman has decided to eliminate the Jewish people, commit a genocide against the Jewish people. God's name is not mentioned anywhere in the Torah, and there's no miracles happening. Haman is basically making his choices, making his moves. And what mysteriously, ironically turns out is everything he does to destroy us actually accomplishes the opposite and actually saves us from assimilation. It launches us into a new period of Jewish history. And the Jewish people embrace Judaism in a way that was even greater than embracing it at Mount Sinai. And all this is the work of Haman, even though that's not at all what he intended, and it's not at all what he understood him choosing. And that's the interesting thing about it. We're eating Haman ears, Haman tashin, or ozne Haman in Hebrew, and that's kind of a weird custom. Like how to celebrate the downfall of our enemies by having some pastry that's named after him. But there's a deep message there that this man whose intention was to be poison actually turned out to be pastry for us, turned out to be something that nurtures us. And this is the remarkable almightiness of God, that the Purim story, unlike the Passover story, God is depicted as struggling with Pharaoh. There's a power struggle going on. Now, Pharaoh doesn't stand a chance to win, but God nonetheless is doing all these miracles. So it seems like somehow God needs to contend with man, even though man will easily collapse, but nonetheless, God must contend with man. The Purim story is a much greater manifestation of God's almightiness, that God doesn't even have to contend with man. You can make whatever choice you want. It is all going to serve my plan and purpose. And so therefore, what difference does choices really make? Well, to the big picture of his story, it won't make a difference. But to your story, it makes all the difference in the world, because you're going to decide, are you going to make choices as a servant of God to be a conduit for his plan and purpose? Or are you going to deny that there is a plan, there is a purpose, then, and delude yourself to think that you're self-contained, self-sufficient, and you can write your own story?
Wow. That's so much that's such powerful, real foundational issues when it comes to free will versus divine destiny. Because if I'm understanding correctly, and you said this at the beginning, God has a plan and purpose and it will be accomplished. But it sounds like if I'm understanding it, that it's not my choices that create what happened, but within what happens, I choose what role I can play within God's plan.
Right. That's the amazing thing about what Mordechai says to Esther. He says something that seems quite odd. He says, Esther, perhaps this is why you've been positioned to be the queen, so that you can advocate for the Jewish people and save the Jewish people. But if you choose not to do that, then salvation will come from somewhere else. That's like a bad argument. You know, like, first of all, where's the guilt? Tell her this is the end. Esther, if you don't do it, it'll never get done. This is the last scene of Jewish history if you don't do something about it. He doesn't say that. He says, if you don't do something about it, it'll get done through some other way. God has many messengers. He can accomplish his goals through a lot of different people. So essentially he's telling her that this is your opportunity to step up to the plate and be in service of God. And if you don't serve God, then somehow God's plan and purpose will be served in some other medium, some other way. And that actually convinces her. And she realizes that really, you know, I tell my students, I'm not worried about the Jewish people. I'm worried about the Jewish person. The Jewish people are going to be okay. History has been, the ending of this has been written and sealed, and the Messiah is coming. The Jewish people are returning to Israel. The Beit HaMikdash is going to be built, and we will be a conduit, a blessing to all of mankind. Done deal. God starts with the end in mind, and the last scene has been written. Now the question is, you know, are you going to be a player in this story, or are you just going to be an observer on the sidelines? But that's really the story. The story is really about you, in terms of what role do you choose to play in serving a higher purpose in your life?
That's a very powerful understanding of what this is all about. And it really gets very practical, because it's a question we really have to keep asking ourselves on a regular basis. Am I a player or an observer? Or there's a sets of circumstances that are part of God's plan, but within what happens, I may not have control over what happens to me or to the nation, but what role am I going to play within what happens to myself and the people around me? And that's something that is a choice.
Basically, to sum it up, there's really one choice that all other choices are variations of, which is either you choose to live in service of God or to live in self-service. Is everything that motivates me all self-serving, or is it serving a greater cause, a greater story? And as in getting outside myself, you know, it's kind of like when I meet students and they say, what does Judaism have to offer me? Well, that's your problem. It didn't come to offer you anything. it is offering you something that you can offer it. In other words, people say, well, how does Judaism fit into my life? It doesn't fit into your life. You're not looking for something to fit in your life, because that's really puny. You're looking for something to fit your life into. And so when Mordechai says, this is your opportunity, you can do an act of such greatness in service of God. And if you don't, God will find somebody else. But this is your opportunity to be the player of the story.
That's so powerful. Now, we keep mentioning God, who's very much in this story, but you commented that he's not actually written in this story. So he's there, but yet we don't actually see his name anywhere within the story.
Well, that's the interesting thing. It's called Megillat Esther, the scroll of Esther, but Megillah also comes from the word legalot, means to reveal, and Esther is associated with the word Hester, which means concealed. So really behind that title is really the revelation of hiddenness. And what's being revealed on Purim is the hidden presence of God. It's like we dress up, because what appears to be on the outside isn't really what's going on in the inside. What appears to be on the outside is this evil man, Haman, who's got a tremendous amount of power, and he's being allowed to make his moves in the direction of his intentions. And yet it all turns around and he ends up being hung by by the girl that he was preparing for Mordecai.
Hmm. So the exact opposite. Well, it really plays into what you're saying is that man can have his plan, but man's plans will play into God's bigger plan, no matter what we
That's
choose.
Right. Well,
Here.
You know, we have the same story with the brothers of Joseph. Joseph has shared these dreams. This very much disturbs the brothers. They see him as a threat to the future of the nation of Israel. He's going to be a dictator. And so they sell him as a slave in order to make sure that his dreams don't come true. And that's exactly how his dream comes true. They end up being the conduit. Everything they did to undermine his dream is actually what guaranteed his dream. The same thing with Pharaoh. Pharaoh was told by his astrologist that the Messiah of the Jewish people is going to be born, and his downfall has to do with water, which is true. Moses, the downfall of Moses had to do with hitting the rock and the water coming out of the rock, but they didn't have so much accuracy. They just knew that water had something to do with the downfall of the Messiah. So he starts throwing all the Jewish babies into the river to drown them. And Moses' mother puts him in a little boat in the river. And the astrologers tell Pharaoh, okay, the Messiah is drowned. He's being thrown into the river. They don't, again, without accuracy, he's in a boat, but they don't see that. And then happens to be that Pharaoh's own daughter walks by and sees this kid. She knows he's Jewish. She brings him home. Pharaoh must think this kid must be Jewish. But in his mind, the Messiah has already been destroyed. And so the interesting thing is that Pharaoh's decree ends up bringing Moses into his home, and he ends up giving Moses, the Messiah of the Jewish people, a royal education to prepare him for his leadership position. And that's the way God demonstrates that I'm completely in control. I don't have to fight you. I don't have to get in your way, because everything you do will go my way.
But what it comes down to is it will go God's way. But if a person makes a bad choice, it still will go God's way. But they still get the responsibility of having made that bad choice, or they get to be the bad character in the book, as opposed to Esther, who ends up being the great character in the book because of the choice that
exactly.
she made.
Your reward is the role you step into, and your punishment is the role that you could have stepped into but denied yourself. That's your punishment. You know, there's a story about a fellow who steals a car. I think I once brought this up. And he's in court, and the judge says, you stole the car? No, sir, I'm innocent. He said, but you were caught in the car. He said, well, sir, I was walking down the street. A policeman came up to this man who was parking in this area and said, sir, this is a very dangerous place. You park here, your car will for sure be stolen. So I tell you, don't park your car. Well, the guy didn't listen. He parked his car there, so I took his car. So the judge says, okay, so now you're guilty of theft. He says, judge, the car would have been stolen anyways. He says, that's right, and you volunteered to do the job, and therefore you volunteered to go to jail for it.
Wow. That's a great analogy for what we're talking about here. So obviously, I think we'd like to be the Esthers of the story, the ones who are making the choices that bring about the good of God's plan. I mean, God's plan will be, but we want to be the ones bringing out the good in the world and revelation of God. And that's what's so interesting, as you're pointing out about her name, that her name means hidden, and yet she's the one who reveals the goodness of God.
Yes.
And that brings me to this question, because you were saying revelation of Purim is showing the hidden presence of God. And that God's name isn't anywhere in the Megillah. It's not revealed, and yet God is throughout this story. And I think that's one of the challenges that we're having during today's times, is that God's sense to us appears to be hidden when bad things are happening, when evil is going on around us and tragedies happen. There's a certain lack of sensing God's presence and goodness. And the Purim story is God is so there, and yet we don't see his name, and yet he's ever there. And to some degree, I feel like we're struggling with that now, of God is here, and yet sometimes because there isn't that full revelation of goodness, we're going through a time where we're sensing more of the dark times right now, and that there seems to be evil is having this upper hand. It's like, where is God in all this?
Well,
we
you
need
know what?
More of that revelation.
It's hard to see what's going on until you get to the end of the story. You know, when you get to the end of the story, you look back and say, oh my gosh, it's like great thriller, adventure stories that You think it was the butler, and only in the last 5 minutes you discover it was the 5-year-old kid that did it, you know? And then you look back and say, oh my God, how did I miss that? It was so obvious it was the 5-year-old kid. But and so mystery, you know, there's an idea that in the future, as Yamali Schokpino, in that time in the future, Messiah comes and redemption has come, we will laugh. Our mouths will be filled with laughter. What makes people laugh? It's that surprising punchline. You know, a joke is I'm taking you in a certain direction, and then I say something and wow. And it's funny because it's not where I thought it was going. And I get the surprise punchline and I look back at it all and realize that really was where it was going, but I only got it at the end. And so there's going to be this laughter. We're going to look back at history and we're going to actually laugh because the punchline of the final scene is going to be so surprising. And we'll look back at it all and realize that it was all the presence of God. It was all the plan of God. It was always and only serving God's purpose. And when that punchline comes up, we will be filled with laughter.
So the challenge we're having right now is that we're still in the middle of a story. The beauty of Purim, what we're celebrating, is that we see the full story and that we got to have that good final laugh at the end. Ha ha ha, Haman thinks he's creating the gallows for Mordechai, and in the end he's hung on it himself, meaning we see the full circle. So in a sense then, Purim is an important celebration right now because it really can remind us and gives us an opportunity to strengthen our faith in understanding that we're in the middle of a story, but when we get the full picture, which we're not there yet for this story, we will have that sense of celebration, even over things that seemed painful and challenging when we were going through them.
Right, but it's so hard to say that now in
well,
the middle of all that, with so many fallen soldiers and our hostages and terror dungeons, and it is. To say it's heartbreaking is too small. It's a heartbreaking a billion times over. And, you know, there's a difference between believing in God and trusting God. Believing God is, I think there's a God. Trusting God, and I trust that he knows what he's doing. And whatever he's doing is guiding the story to the greatest good. Very hard to see that right now. And but, you know, I think that's the right choice to make in terms of what we should remind ourselves of. And, you know, Pesach comes, Omdim Aleinu L'kaloteinu B'chol Dor V'dor. In every generation, somebody got up and tried to kill us, destroy us, eliminate us. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu B'yadav, and God saves us from them. But God can save us through using the IDF. You know, it's not necessarily will there be some splitting of a sea here, but this is you know, the real question we have to ask ourselves is: are we just going to be spectators and wait for the happy ending, or are we going to get in there and contribute in whatever way we can to winning this war? And it could be prayer, it could be donations, it could be, you know, a lot of things. It's encouraging people that are suffering. It's whatever way we can to contribute to the success of this war and the return of our hostages.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm thinking as Purim's coming up, and exactly as right is with the war going on, it's not a joyful time because there is so much pain. And yet this holiday is still upon us. But with everything you've shared with us, Rabbi, on understanding what this holiday represents, I think there is a time to, you know, it's an opportunity to put some perspective with even within all the pain of we're in the middle of this story and right now we're feeling the pain. But there are still this holidays coming up, which is a reminder that God is in this picture, even if we're not seeing where he is. There is some bigger plan, even though we're not understanding it at this moment. And just reminding us of that still gives us a little bit of a pause to be in a place where we can remember what happened in the past and celebrate it. And take some of that forward with us so that we can have some of that amunah, some of that faith, especially when it's challenging right now. But that's what this opportunity of this Purim message shares with us onward. I want to thank you all for joining us. Soul Talk with Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.